No time to chit-chat this week because we got to get cooking for Vivi's elegant birthday dinner party. But we do spend a few minutes recapping our comedic food-filled weekend in LA. Then we welcome our sibling friends, Tyler and Jeff Chow, who talk about Mama Sherry and the five-course Taiwanese dishes she would cook for the family. Oh, I gotta go. Court's calling for a sous chef.
Grab your fork and grab your knife. Morning, afternoon, and night. Mama's recipe in mind. We're about to have a good time. Hey, sis, eat this. Hey, sis, eat this. Woohoo!
Hey, sis.
Hey, sis.
What's happening?
Can we make this snappy today?
We're going to have to.
I mean, I got to get downstairs and cook my arse off.
We both do.
I know.
Vivi's birthday, and we've committed to making a feast.
Well, she wanted a feast. It's kind of embarrassing to admit what she wants for dinner, lobster pasta, but we're going to do it.
She has very good taste.
She has at least she didn't ask for caviar, which I thought she would. But no, we're going to make her a dinner. She's at Disneyland right now, and I'm completely overcompensating because of her older sister's, impending, is that the right word? Bat mitzvah?
I think so.
Yeah. And the bat mitzvah that's coming up. So I feel like she's getting all the birthday attention. So I'm just trying to go over the top to make it special for her.
It's going to be super special.
Oh, we're going to make your boule.
Oh, yes. Jeff Morrow's Brie Boule.
So excited.
You hollow out like a boule, and you put in his calls for a spicy jam, but we're going to do an apricot jam.
Mm-hmm.
And you just slather that in there. And then you put the brie in there and you slice the bread all along the sides so that it becomes like pull apart bread.
Oh, I'm so excited for this.
Yeah.
Sounds amazing.
It's really good. I've made it before.
And I wanted to get all crazy Courtney Christine-y, but you won't let me because you think it's going to be too much. But
there's something else you wanted to do. And I was like, reel it in, Court. Reel it in.
Yeah. We're going to just do a couple things. And then we're going to do the lobster pasta. We're going to use leftover tenderloin from Christmas that's been frozen.
Right.
Because
we didn't get to use it.
Yeah, we didn't get to use it. So we're going to do beef tenderloin. Mama Ashley's beef tenderloin.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I know what you're going to be mad at me about. So we were just going to do like a Caesar salad because the pasta is a lot, but I felt like it wasn't going to be enough. So at the grocery store, I bought some asparagus so we can do our everything bagel season asparagus on the side.
Yeah, that's easy. It's going to be like course after course.
No, we're not going to do that. But we are going to add an extra pasta. We're going to do that John and Vinny's vodka pasta for those who don't eat lobby.
That's true.
Those idiots that don't eat lobster. And we're going to round it out with an ice cream sundae bar.
I'm super excited about the ice cream sundae bar.
Yeah. It's been good. But
we cooked last night too.
Oh yeah, we did. We got in there, chefed it up. I made that. Actually, this recipe is going to be on our website this week. It's a little chicken that I learned to make in Italy where you cube chicken breast and you dredge them in flour. And you saute them in butter and you add a little Madeira wine. It's like a really easy sauce that came together so nicely. And I loved how you just kind of came in there and made up your own gravy.
Well, there's all these little brown bits of flour that were in there and like buttery goodness. And I was like, you know, if we just add some chicken broth and some wine, it'll kind of turn into this roux.
Well, and then you said mustard, which we
did. Mustard, and I did some shallots.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing was really cool is you had some arrowroot instead of the cornstarch, and that thickened up so nicely.
Yeah, and I think it's better for you than cornstarch. Yeah. I don't know exactly why, but that's good to note that the arrowroot thickened better.
I thought it was really funny that you didn't know what a slurry was.
Yeah.
You don't know that?
No.
Okay. I thought that that was just common knowledge, but a slurry is when you're trying to thicken something and it calls for cornstarch. Mm-hmm. So you don't want to just plop the cornstarch into the liquid. You want to take a little bit of whatever liquid you're using, or you could use water or chicken broth and slurry that in. Like you just whip it in with.
If I went into Webster's and looked up slurry, would this be a definition that I'd find? Or is this like a Food Network kind of thing?
That's a good question. Yeah. But it could be for a drunk or a kitchen technique.
Yeah. That's the truth.
But it was funny. So I was catching some videos of us last night cooking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And when I was on the call today for work, our friend Darren, aka Scooter, was like, I mean, I don't even think you cook. Like, all you do is just video and drink martinis.
I know. Well, he's when like, we're together.
Yeah, he's like, your favorite thing is to go there. You say that your favorite thing is to go in there and cook with your sister, but I don't see you cooking.
You just see us drinking martinis.
No, he's like, Courtney's doing all the cooking. I was like, well, someone has to video.
That's true. Yeah. Well, actually, you're better at the videoing. But it was funny because we sat down and you and I were like, oh my God, this is so good. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was delicious. And I thought the gravy you made was so good. And Vivi liked it. But I looked over and Reagan had like not eaten any chicken. And then I looked over at Jason's. I'm like, do you want some more? And he's like, nope, I'm good. I was like, did you like it? And he's like, it was good. And Reagan, you were like, definitely not an amazing. He's like, not an amazing. So I don't know what offended him so much, but
I thought it was an amazing.
I thought so too.
We'll make it for Lance sometime.
Maybe because we put a little squeeze of lemon juice into that gravy and maybe that offended him.
I really didn't taste the lemon, but I'm not a good judge because the more lemon, the better for me.
I also use gluten-free flour and it's definitely better when you use the real flour.
Yeah, but you know, I'm pretty sensitive to when it comes to gluten products, mm-hmm. gluten-free products. Mm-hmm. And I thought it tasted delicious.
Yeah, I don't know.
So
it was just Trader Joe's all-purpose gluten-free flour. Yeah. It wasn't almond flour. It was like all-purpose gluten-free flour.
Sure.
But I'll put the recipe up on the website. You might want to try it. I think it's great and it comes together so quickly.
Yeah. I think that's a good one.
Had a fun weekend.
We had a great weekend. We went and saw Fortune Feimster.
That pretty little lady.
That pretty little lady.
She was great. She was stand-up comic.
Hilarious.
Host of the Handsome podcast.
She's got two Netflix specials that y'all should check out. If you haven't already, and if she's coming to your city, definitely go.
Yeah.
Both of our husbands said it was amazing.
Yeah.
Fortune got an amazing.
Our chicken didn't. But we went to the most incredible Michelin star restaurant beforehand that we need to talk about.
Yes. And I'd like to point out that since you said it's Michelin star, I feel like sometimes that makes it sound like there's a giant price tag.
Oh yeah. No, it wasn't. Or fancy. This was like super casual.
Yes. And so I would like to encourage people to seek out places that are Michelin star that aren't intimidating, but you might think it is.
Well, and the chef, Stephanie
Izard,
is a James Beard Award winner mm-hmm. too. And she Top started chef. This restaurant, Girl and the Goat, in Chicago. Mm-hmm. They opened an LA location a couple of years ago. I've never been able to get a reservation, but since you made one at 5 p.m., mm-hmm. we got in.
Yeah.
It was amazing. We had goat.
We did have goat. It was
goat curry.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But the highlight for me was the braised short ribs over the glass noodles.
That was a panty dropper.
And you know how our cousin Kirk has pizza crack?
Yeah.
Well, I would go as far as to say that there is girl in the goat crack.
Oh, because that little almost slaw they put on everything?
Yes. So what did we say it was? It was probably like Fresno chilies.
Cilantro, parsley. There might have been some basil in there.
Yes.
Chilies, like red pepper, maybe like really thinly sliced. I don't know.
That's what I think.
Carrot, really thinly sliced carrot. Little herb mixture, essentially. Ugh. And they put it on top of everything and it just brightened the dishes.
It was delicious.
It was incredible. And a beautiful, like just a beautiful restaurant.
Yeah. That was definitely fun.
So, yeah. I mean, tomorrow we've got our big podcasting conference for the rest of the week. And, but I'm really excited about these guests.
Me too. We have a brother and sister duo joining us today, Tyler and Jeff Chow. And they are really here to celebrate Mama Sherry. And they have a very interesting story to tell about them growing up here in California, Southern California, as Asian Americans.
Yeah, she immigrated from Taiwan when she was 7. Her parents came over here with $500 in their pocket mm-hmm. and made their way over here. And they actually own a vegetable farm that Jeff runs now. And so I say food adjacent, but they grow food and the mother's an incredible cook.
Yeah.
And it's just a really heartwarming story. I was listening to it earlier today, the final edit, and I cried. So
yeah,
I think it's a sweet one.
Tyler's also a creator in the space on YouTube and has her own channel called The Creator's Attorney, where she represents creators.
Yeah, it's really cool. And her brother also is a food content creator, and we'll get into it on the podcast, but let's welcome to the show Tyler and Jeff.
Let's do it. Hey, sis.
Hey, sis.
Today we have on two content creators who are taking the YouTube world by storm.
The YouTubes.
Yes. We want to welcome Tyler and Jeff to Hey, Sis, Eat This. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having us.
We're very excited. So Tyler Chow is an attorney and has been in the business as an entertainment lawyer at big corporations like Disney and BuzzFeed, but she eventually moved on to take law in her own hands. And she started her own business where she represents content creators. And you are a content creator as well. And you have the Creator's Attorney, and you have really fun videos. I've actually loved watching them because you kind of dissect all of these cases that are happening in entertainment and what the different sides of them are. It's really, really interesting. And I do have to tell you, we have a little nickname for you.
Okay. And we're She's probably heard it before.
If you have, what we call you, Tyler the Creator.
Uh-huh. Oh. I get that all the time.
I bet you do. We thought we were so witty and funny. We were like, okay, we're going to have Tyler the Creator on the podcast today. Yes. But it is our Tyler the Creator.
Yes, that is true. So Tyler, tell us a little bit more about your channel and your business and what you're doing for content creators.
Well, thank you for having us. We're so honored and excited to be here. So I'll tell you a story, which I haven't actually shared on YouTube or in the world quite as much is, you know, I started my YouTube channel because I had a midlife crisis. I really did. I wanted to, you know, I asked myself, like, what is my creative legacy? I was an English major in undergrad at Berkeley. I wanted to be a novelist, but I went to law school because I was practical. I needed to take care of my parents and my younger siblings. And so I kind of gave that dream up. But about a year and a half ago, I said, you know, I want to do a YouTube channel.
That creativity never dies, right?
It never dies. Yeah. And so, you know, for a long time in Hollywood, because I've been an attorney in Hollywood for 16 years, it was enough for me to think, well, I'm helping other creatives achieve their creative vision, right? Through their films. But then at some point I thought, you know, I want to create something. So what is that thing? So my first couple videos, like nobody watched. But my third video blew up. And those three videos got me to 10,000 within a month.
Wow.
So I was like, you know, I'm hooked and I love this. And I love being able to give people kind of the legal analysis as
you're
to what's
happening.
Yes,
people.
Yes, because people just didn't know, like, what's happening here.
But at the same time, you're also nurturing these careers for other content creators as well, in addition to your own channel. And you have a lot of food creators, which we love, which is exciting.
We do. We do have a lot of food creators, and you guys will have to have some of them on.
We're so excited.
Janelle Eats is one of them. She's fantastic. She's got great siblings and... Yeah,
I love it.
Well, Jeff, we're not forgetting about you over there. You're also in the creator world, and I know that you're involved in your parents' farming business, which is a whole other food-related topic we're going to get into. But tell us a little bit about what you have going on right now.
Yeah, appreciate you guys inviting me. But I think it kind of has a big long story to it.
Yeah.
So it kind of deviates from the understanding that what YouTube is.
Yeah.
It's kind of more of a library, and I kind of wanted to show later down the line, my kids, who my parents are. I had a fateful event when I was younger, about 10 or so. I only got to saw my grandma once. Mm-hmm. She was on a deathbed, unfortunately. And I kind of wanted to portray my mom and dad to my kids and see who they are. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the ambition and the idea of YouTube, is basically seeing who their personality is and what their love
is. Like an archive. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love that. That's sort of what we talk about all the time doing this podcast, is that, you know, we feel like we're creating these memories of families, and we talk about our parents all the time, and we have our parents on. And when our kids, you know, grow up, they'll have these archives to go and listen to us and hear the history of their family, you know? So that's really sweet, Jeff. Well, the two of you are 15 years apart.
Yes.
Which we'd like to point out makes you two the biggest gap between siblings we've ever had on this show.
It's a big gap.
It is.
So, Jeff, how did this happen? How are you so far apart?
I don't know.
I know how it happened.
I don't know.
My sister and I like to tease him and say he was an accident.
I was the accident.
So how many siblings are there total?
So we do have a sister in between, okay. and she is 5 years younger okay. than me.
And 9 years apart from me.
Oh, yeah. Right. Yeah. So your parents just spaced yeah. everybody out.
When I was younger, I had like 3 moms. So 2 older sisters and my actual
just
mom.
Unfortunate for him, I think. Yeah.
A little bit.
Well, you learned a lot and yeah. you probably have that sensitive side mm-hmm. because of the women yes. in your life.
Definitely.
And that influence, I think, is really awesome.
Yeah. yeah. Men need a little, you know, sister love to help them.
Definitely. I think a part of my success from my life is just seeing how they operate in life and just not falling through their alignment. So I think that was like a really big blessing when I was younger.
That's Aww. Really yeah. sweet.
That is.
You're so nice.
yeah.
My sisters raised me that way.
So what was that relationship like growing up with y'all 15 years apart? Tyler, you probably have a little bit more perspective since you're the older sister.
Well, it was really hard. I mean, you know, I think we didn't have much of a like a sibling relationship, right? Because mm-hmm. by the time I left for college, he was only 3.
Right.
And so, but we've always been very close. Mm-hmm. I mean, I made it a point to always like stay connected with him. I mean, so my parents and I immigrated here from Taiwan when mm-hmm. I was 7. My parents still to this day don't really speak English much. And mm-hmm. so there was no one really reading him bedtime stories.
Oh.
So what I did was I bought us each copies of Harry Potter. Mm-hmm. And every night I would call home because this is before iPhones, right? Like I would call home.
While you were in college?
Mm-hmm, and I would read him bedtime stories every night.
Tyler, that I just got the chills. That's the sweetest sibling story I think we've ever heard on this show. So you really were like a mother to him in a lot of ways.
More so. Yeah. And I think now, you know, we are more siblings. And,
right.
And he's an old soul. I mean, I never mm-hmm. feel like he's 15 years younger than me. But
right.
I've always tried to like stay close to him, even though I was far away.
Mm-hmm.
And I came back for law school and I got to see him grow up a little more. You know, mm-hmm. when he was in high school, I had already met my husband, Terrence. And so Terrence became kind of like a role model sports wise for him, you know, seeing what that looked like. So
mm-hmm. yeah.
we were like almost like a second set of parents.
Sure.
For him, a little bit.
Right.
Yeah.
yeah. Mentors.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And did your mom treat you differently because like you're older and you're the oldest and she probably had, you know, that relationship with you, especially having immigrated with you. And then your brother comes along. Was she more lenient on him?
Oh,
or?
For sure.
Worlds apart. Yeah. Worlds apart.
Like, he's like the baby and he kind of can do no wrong.
Oh yeah.
She mm-hmm. cooks him and she cooks him like everything he wants. And I think my sister and I and him had a very different childhood because we grew up working in the swap meets. My sister and I did.
Oh, wow.
And by the time he came around, that was kind of like, it was kind of ending, right?
Yeah,
like you saw it for a little bit, but he never had to like run, you know, the swap meet stall by himself the way
right.
my sister and I mm-hmm. did.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. Wow. I want to get into that. So like we mentioned, Tyler and Jeff are food world adjacent. So their parents own a vegetable farm in Ontario, mm-hmm. California, mm-hmm. right? I'd love to hear a little bit more about the farm. I know you're heavily involved in that, Jeff.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about the farm.
I feel like a farm is a very unique place now, you know, being in Southern California. You don't really get 2 acres of property to live on.
Right.
I think I had a very unique childhood. I think we both did.
Yeah.
It kind of came along with the work where when I was younger, I really did not like the farm where we had to work probably every day.
You had to get out there and work it.
And that's probably why we have the work ethic we do is because we're used to working 7 days a week. But I didn't really have a childhood where I had friends to go hang out with, nor did I think my sister. And I think that made it hard for us. You know, looking at the everyday generic American life where you have mm-hmm. the 5 days and the weekends, the friends to play with, we didn't really have that. And, you know, I think that's like a big part of my journey is where I get to kind of step back and realize the gifts that I got when I was younger versus what I didn't get.
Right.
Yeah.
That's a really enlightened way to look at it because you could be bitter and angry,
oh, yeah.
but instead you're recognizing the work ethic you got and that you actually have this skill level, the skill set too, right? Growing fruit and vegetables, that is quite a gift. What is your involvement in the farm today?
Now it's basically taken over for my parents. I mean, my parents are pretty much older. My dad's around 80 now.
And don't you grow very unique vegetables mm-hmm. there? Are they specifically like Chinese vegetables or what are some of the things that you
yeah,
grow?
Yeah, majority are Chinese, Asian variations. I think basically what my dad grew up with and he kind of immigrated those vegetables to America.
Yeah.
Yeah, one of them is just a loofah. I think majority of our crop is loofah. I think we have like 8 vineyards of loofah. So, yeah.
Is that good? Tasty?
My mom knows how to make it. So
yeah.
Tyler, tell us about how your family went from the swap meet to farming.
Well, so I think the farming was always a little bit there, like recreationally. Like my dad loves, you know, farming, and he's very almost Zen-like, Buddha-like. You know, he just loves being able to like go in the garden and just be at peace. My mom can sometimes be not so peaceful. Like, I think it was like an escape for him.
Yeah.
And then the swap meet, you know, the swap meet just died because Amazon came along, Walmart came along, Target came along and just kind of killed it, right? Like there was no need to go to the swap meets to buy stuff.
We want to hear more about Mama Sherry. And as you all mentioned, she and her dad immigrated. So tell us a little bit about that immigration. And, you know, you were a part of that. And how did they choose California? I don't know if they came directly to California or how that came about.
So there's a really fascinating, you know, almost like it's
fateful.
Story where, so when I was born, my dad was actually one of the wealthiest men in Asia.
Wow.
He made computer chips for toys, you know, toy manufacturers in Japan. I had my own bodyguard. And because in Asia, it was like very common to kidnap the kids of wealthy businessmen and ransom them.
And this was in Taiwan?
In Taiwan. And then, but when I was five, one of my dad's vice presidents embezzled about $1 million in cash, which was a lot of money back then. Sure. And then one of his warehouses burnt down. Mm. So in Taiwan, you know, the insurance policy only covers the structure. And
did it burn down? Like, do you think someone burned it down?
I don't know. We'd never know. It knew. And so my parents basically declared bankruptcy and came to the U.S. with, I think, $500 to their names. They lived in a cabin in Big Bear with no running water or electricity. And I actually was left behind.
In Big Bear.
Wow. And they just had a random friend who was living in that area. And he had this cabin and he said, you guys could go live there for free for
For
our
listeners who don't know, Big Bear is just a small ski town in California, kind of a dot on the map.
Right. And 40 years ago, it was like nothing. Yeah, right. There was nothing out there. And so my parents came here first and left me behind in Taiwan with my grandma for 2 years, which actually left some traumatic scars for me, you know, because I thought my parents were gone.
Right.
So that's something I've
had. How old were you?
I was five. Okay. And so I came when I was seven.
Okay.
And I didn't know this, but my mom later on shared with me, like, you know, I just couldn't get a green card for you. Mm-hmm. Like, she was like telling the immigration officer, oh, like, I want to take her to Disneyland. And he's like, she's too young. She won't remember. And so he blocked me from coming. And so for 2 years, like, I was just traumatized thinking my parents were gone.
Oh my gosh.
But so we came here and my parents started working in the swap meet. And like Jeff was saying, you know, we never really had like a typical childhood, right? My sister and I worked we woke up at 5 a.m. We would drive, you know, to a swap meet. We sold things like toys and like artificial flowers. That actually became our business, was artificial flowers.
Wow.
And so for all of my childhood until 18, when I went to, you know, Berkeley, that's all I did. We never vacationed. Like, we didn't even know what that was, right? Like, until I went to college and law school, I didn't know that people vacationed. But we had a very happy childhood. Mm. I mean, you know, my dad actually started growing bamboos, which was before the loofah. Huh. And so for many, many years, it was 2 acres of bamboo.
Mm. Wow.
And it's very hard work. I mean, you know, like to extract the bamboo, you have to hit it like with a hammer and a chisel. And it's just like,
It's rough.
So they would sell it to Chinese supermarkets, what they still do with the loofah, but it's, you know, like probably 5 to 6 months out of the year. So, you know, we grew up with a lot of great food in our lives. And so they just started doing that. And so that grew to like a lot of different, I mean, they have also all these fruits, you know, it's like peaches and berries and, you know, avocado and guava. I mean, it was just like everything. We always ate from the farm, basically, you know, whatever they grew.
Mom would walk out there.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
So they already had the land.
Yes.
Then.
Yes.
Wow.
We always had the 2 acre land and it was an old horse farm. And so the soil was very
good
fertile.
Manure. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
very good.
That's really interesting.
Soil.
And so you just grew up with a very farm to table experience.
Yes.
Before it was cool. Yeah.
Yeah. We just, that was just normal to us. Now it's like fashionable. You
right.
know?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah. That's so cool. And so a lot of those vegetables and fruits are still on the property.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And where do you all sell them to? Is it to grocers? Is it to private, you know, chefs? Or what's kind of that business model like now?
It's kind of more to grocers, majority of it, more friends and stuff like that, word of mouth. Majority is grocers, I think.
Chinese grocers.
Yeah, Chinese though. Grocers.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think a reason why mom's cooking is so great just because it was literally from the backyard, just freshly picked.
Right.
I think that's like the allure, and that's, I think, like what makes like our childhood so special is basically I ask people like, do you know where carrots come from? Like, yeah, they come from a vine. I'm like, what? Yeah. Yeah.
Let's go back to your mom and her childhood. Did she grow up in Taiwan as well? And how did she meet your dad?
So my mom grew up super poor, mm-hmm. one of eight. Her dad actually passed when she was very young. Okay. And so my grandma, like who was illiterate, like mm-hmm. didn't read, like was washing laundry for families.
Oh, wow.
And my mom actually had a really tough childhood. I mean, she didn't share this until with us recently, but she was basically like given away to a family to like as a servant.
Yeah.
And she was like probably 5 or 7.
Oh my God.
And who knows the abuse that she suffered, you know? So,
right.
So, and I think she met my dad, you know, through friends and, you know, and I think they had a very wild love story.
Oh, yeah.
We should probably share some pictures of them when they were young.
Oh, that's
just,
so
just
sweet.
Beautiful, just such a beautiful couple. And they had a great love story. And I think that's why my mom came with my dad, you know, to be with him, to support him when kind of everything fell apart, you know. So it's a great love story.
Yeah, it's
really sweet.
Yeah.
That is. That's mm-hmm. so sweet. So Tyler, you and Jeff obviously had pretty different dinner tables because you weren't really at the same one.
Or maybe they didn't have very different dinner tables.
Maybe that's true.
You know?
We don't know. But we
maybe
know.
Mama Sherry kept it consistent.
Maybe she
years.
Did. It sounds like it was filled with great food, but you know, y'all were, when you weren't at the swap meet, was there a dinner at every night at 6 o'clock?
I mean, I think so. Now I think back to it.
Mom cooked every night.
But, she cooked every single night. And it was always like 5 or 6 dishes of like,
wow.
You know, like you imagine going to a Chinese restaurant.
Family
but like
style.
Family style. And it was just the most amazing food.
Yeah.
My mom is the most amazing chef. We always joke, you should open up your own restaurant. And she's like, no, that's like the hardest work in the world, which
is
true.
It's true.
And so, but she is like, anytime we bring friends over or anything, they're just like, oh my God.
I wonder if
like
she
the
grew
most
up
elevated.
Cooking, was having to, if she was working for another family at such
so.
A young
I
age, I wonder if she learned
young.
To cook.
I think she always said, like, you know, I have 60 years experience cooking, so you're at the tail end of my masterpiece.
I think my grandma, which I know Jeff doesn't have memories of, was an amazing cook as well. And so they just,
down.
You know, I think it just got passed down to her. And it's just, you know, some people are kind of naturally talented at making food. My mom doesn't look at recipes or anything, but she can literally look at a video and say, okay, I know how to make that. And like, she doesn't need necessarily like all the ingredients.
She's an intuitive cook. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. One of the best stories, I was cooking a steak the other day and my mom was just sitting on at the dinner table and my mom was like, the heat's too high. I'm like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
By just hearing like the sizzle on the steak.
Oh. Just hearing.
Yeah, I was like, there's no way. And I take off the steak and I'm like, oh, it's a little bit overdone. I was like, that's when I knew like, I got to listen to mom when cooking.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mama knows fast.
Yeah.
Mama Sherry knows fast. I want to know, you said 6 dishes. How long did that take her? What time did she start cooking?
She's fast.
Yeah.
Really?
She's fast. She can probably do it in 20 minutes, right? Like, she's just like, it's one after another.
Because I'm so intimidated by Asian cooking so much. I feel like there's so many ingredients.
Yeah.
That, you know, there's kind of steps in there that are just not familiar to me.
Well,
so
I'm thinking about that. I mean, a lot of it is stir fried, Like stir fried vegetables are actually really fast. It's the garlic and then you put the vegetables in and then it's the technique, right? It's like what you said about
technique.
Like the heat and how long and I mean, and a little bit of water. Like she just knows, right? So like maybe 3 dishes are vegetables. So that's fast.
Okay.
Do you want to talk about mom's like most famous dishes?
Yes, definitely want to hear about the most famous dishes.
She has a lot. I mean, when I was younger, I think Tyler would know more, but she used to have like big dinner parties every weekend.
Really?
Who would be
invited to these dinner parties?
Like, probably like her coworkers, friends, like the house was filled like with like 20-ish people, right?
They always entertain. My parents, you know, even though a lot of times we grew up, you know, kind of poor, they always just open up their house to anybody and everybody, you know, and if anyone ever needed to borrow money, if they only have $10 left, they'll give 5 to someone. I mean, that's who my parents are, right?
Yeah.
Like they're very loving, you know, food is like, I think their love language.
Right.
Would you agree?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think dishes that I would want to eat before I die would be mom's eggs. You know, she has a very special way of making eggs.
Like scrambled eggs?
Yes. Or it's like a Japanese / Taiwanese style of making eggs.
It's very special. Like, yeah. So my kids love it. It's like there's some special way where it's basically just egg and soy sauce.
Yeah. Okay.
But the heat is super, super high, and she puts it in, and it's literally in there for like a minute. It comes out and it's just like the most creamy, silky scrambled egg you'll ever have.
With soy sauce.
Yeah, with soy sauce.
And then you put it over a bowl of like steaming rice. It's the
not
most
too
amazing.
Salty.
Do you put oil in there?
Oil first, yeah. Okay. And then the oil gets really hot, and it's almost like you'll have to come to the farm and we'll have to make it for you guys.
Well, because, you know, in fried rice, there's egg. Yes. That's kind of like scrambled and chopped, and that's different.
It's all, you know, my sister, it's all technique.
Yeah,
you know,
all technique. Like 60 it's years of very, very eggs. Soft. Yeah. So in fried rice, I think the egg can get a little harder, right? And that's what it's supposed to be, but this is totally different. I think another dish that is very famous is her tomato egg, which is actually a Taiwanese dish you can get at some restaurants, but nobody makes it as good as hers. I mean, it's basically just tomatoes. And I mean, it might sound a little weird, but it's like it's like an omelet, I guess.
Like essentially,
like
an omelet.
Yeah, but it's also stir fried very fast, and the egg's like super silky and
super
soft.
Silky, creamy.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm nervous that I would never be able to recreate it because I don't have the technique with
Actually, that's a great question. Like, do you know how to replicate it? We should probably learn, right?
Before maybe when we go to the farm, she can teach us.
But we always say like legacy and parents, like we should probably learn these things before our parents leave, are gone.
I think
that's
like part of my reasoning for the YouTube channel, because it's going to be a lot of my mom's recipes that I can one day pass down.
Yeah. Yes. I tell all of our guests this, that, you know, really, if you have those recipes, write them down, because so many of us, our moms were like, oh, it's just a little bit of this or a little bit of that, or it's written on some 3x5 index card that's got stains on it. Like really, we're trying to get everything uploaded into the computer so that we can preserve those. I would recommend you do that. Although she's probably like, if she's such an intuitive cook, she's probably like, I don't know. I just throw
a little bit of this, a little bit of that.
Totally. Like,
yeah.
Ask her like, and she's like, well, just watch or eyeball it. She says that a lot. Yeah. Eyeball it.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Now, did she cook mainly Taiwanese, Chinese food, or did she cook American food as well?
Never American food.
No.
I don't think she knows.
Some kind of fusion of it, but it's all majority based.
I don't think she knows how to. When I got older, and like after law school, like I would come home, like sometimes I would make stuff for her, like, you know, like spaghetti and red sauce. Sure. And she'd be like, oh, this is good. Like, tell me how to make it. Uh-huh. Or clam chowder, right? Sure. That was my thing. I always make clam chowder for my dad because he loves it.
Oh.
So when I would be making, and I'm very like, I need a recipe. Like, that's how I cook, right? And so she would watch me cook it once, and then she's like, I got it. Like, she just knows like how to cook it, you know? And so like, she is like a master chef. Yeah, I mean, there's no other way to describe her.
Amazing. Mm-hmm. And would she make your lunches every day and
for school?
Pack your lunches?
Oh, well, that's a great story. I actually don't know your answer. Yeah. But for me, like, so in the very beginning, she would make me Chinese food.
Yeah.
And it would be smelly.
Yeah.
And I was the only Asian person growing up in Ontario. Mm-hmm. That quickly stopped because people made fun of me.
Yeah. Oh.
And so I told her, I was like, you got to make me sandwiches. And she's like, I don't know how to make sandwiches. So she made me tuna and egg salad sandwich.
This is even worse.
Yeah. But I loved it. It was okay. Too. Like, I liked it. And I remember she always would use like aluminum foil instead of like baggies.
Wax paper baggies,
right. And there's a smell and a taste to aluminum that to this day I will not pack stuff in aluminum.
Oh, that's funny.
Do you know what I'm talking about? Yes, a little metallic. I never liked it. I would tell her and she was like, that's what we're using. And I was like, okay. your lunch? I'm sorry.
No. Yeah. Jeff, were the lunches different for you by the time you came around?
I think it was probably influenced by my sisters. I think more than anything else, I got school lunch, which I'm sure my parents were not happy about.
She's like, I'm over this. I'm not getting up early for that.
But usually my two sisters, Tyler and Chris, would always pack me lunch. So it's more Americanized and stuff like that. So I didn't really get the experience that Tyler got when I was younger. So
I bet you didn't pack it in foil, did you?
No. But you know, like speaking of that, I mean, we made sure that Jeff had the type of American childhood that we didn't have. Mm. Right. So for him, there was Santa and there was Easter Bunny and all of that, which my sister and I didn't get because my parents just didn't know that was a thing that they needed to do. But we always made sure his Christmases were very special.
Did your mom, was it easy for your mother to embrace the newer American traditions, or was there pushback with that when you were fighting to have Santa Claus?
Not that. I think like he's her baby. So yeah. like anything to make it special for him, like she'll be on board. But generally, I think American culture, American food, like she has a hard time kind of understanding it. We've had to kind of really educate her through mm-hmm. the years, don't you think?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's gotten better over the years. But I think when I was also younger, I still remember that turmoil when the two cultures would clash. Mm-hmm. You know, she didn't really understand the basis of after school activities and stuff like that is more piano or studying and stuff like
right.
that. Yeah, yeah.
Right. Right. Yeah. And working on the farm.
Yeah. And working yeah. on the farm. Exactly.
You know, you had mentioned some of the hardships that you faced growing up to immigrant parents in mm-hmm. a small town. So Jeffrey, I was wondering if you could elaborate a little bit on some of the Asian American cultural shifts that you experienced growing up.
That's a good question. I think elementary school was a little bit harder for me just because I think I was, like my sister, like one out of 500 kids, majority of them were Hispanic or Caucasian. And it was like five other Asian kids and the culture wasn't really there and the bonding wasn't really there. So got into middle school and high school, there were a lot more Asian kids. So I felt a little bit more integrated. I felt right. more at home, but it was always that griminess where I didn't really feel like there was a place that belonged. I think that's like a real theme in Asian American dynamics where we just don't feel at place. You know, we don't feel like there's a community or we don't feel like I was at home.
Right.
You know, I think the part where I kind of grew up a little bit and moved out of the farm for a little bit, then coming home, I was like, I recognized like how much love there was at home where I didn't really need all that other exterior stuff. I just compared right. to what other kids were having versus what I actually did have. And when I did have that shift in dynamic, I think it kind of opened up my heart to understand who my parents were and how much they did love me. Because, you know, I think majority of our challenges growing up, you know, throughout, you know, our human existence is understanding how much love there is and what kind of walls you have to remove to like embrace that love.
For sure. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I think, you know, looking back at our childhood, I mean, once I came to be with my parents, like I had an amazing childhood. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't really know that we were like poor, right? Or that we were lacking in anything. Mm-hmm. It just never felt that way. My parents always, you know, the only thing I cared about was having books and reading. So they always bought me books, right? Because they thought that was like a good investment. Like you can right. buy as many books as you want. It was almost like, yes, we did have this kind of like insular community of Chinese families mm-hmm. that would gather around us. And, you know, I think my experience was a little different than Jeff because I was older than him. You know, I did grow up with a little bit of kids bullying me or making mm-hmm. fun of me for being Asian. But it wasn't like forever. It wasn't all mm-hmm. the time. You know, I kind of just tuned it out and I kind of made up for that for just being a really good student. That was always my drive. Like, I'm just going to mm-hmm. show them I'm going to do really well in school. And so that was my motivation, right? Was I just want to like basically, you know, show that I'm not dumb. Because in the first few years, because I wasn't speaking English, like that was what was.
That must have been hard.
Yeah. It was just like, you're so dumb. You don't speak English, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. And I wasn't in ESL. Like my parents didn't put me in ESL. And like, I don't know why the school didn't. So I basically like you white knuckled learned. My way through it. I watch a lot of Three's Company and I Love Lucy. That's how I learned English a lot, was watching TV.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
I love how close they kept you, your parents. Mm-hmm. You know, it seems like, you know, it's so beautiful to have these dinner parties and dinner every single night with all the courses and working on the farm and going to the swap meets together. I'm sure it was not always easy growing up, but it made probably for a very close family. Yeah,
we're still definitely very close.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What does Mama Sherry make for the Lunar New Year? Is there a traditional spread that she cooks?
There's a lot. I think it kind of revolves around my mom's current, like, what she's excited to make. Basically, one staple is like sticky rice, like sesame mm-hmm. sticky mm-hmm. rice. We'll definitely have to make you some when
yes,
you guys come
so
over.
Good.
There's all this pork, fish, everything. Mm-hmm. It just depends on what she's made over the years. I think one big staple is she has this sea bass dish, which has a miso marinade. Oh. It's like one of like the best things you guys have to try as well.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to be on my... Before I die, I have to eat again.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what, will you all go to the farm to celebrate?
So, yeah. So, the tradition is that the family is supposed to gather on New Year's Eve.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Right. Because there's a lot of, you know, superstition and traditions. But one of the things is if you gather at home the night before New Year's, then that means you'll be together all year long, right? And mm-hmm. so what we typically do for New Year's is we do hot pot, you know,
it's called
huo huo in Chinese. And so my mom has I mean, you can get hot pot anywhere, right?
She has hot pots at her house?
Oh, we do it all the time. We do too in our own family. Like my kids in our own culture love it.
Don't you need like a special table for it?
No. You can buy it on Amazon. You just buy a little, it's almost like an electric, you know, top.
Oh, wow.
Burner. And then you just put a big pot on top. And then we have all the sliced beef and the vegetables. But my mom's is so special because she makes this special sauce, this saute sauce that you can't, like there's a raw egg in it. Like no one can replicate. Anyone who comes to our house and has that sauce, they're like, we want to come back.
Yeah. What's it called? What do you dip in the sauce? Everything?
Everything.
Yeah.
You know, like the fish balls, the sliced meat, all the vegetables from our farm, you know, so it's just, it's a very special meal.
Does the sauce have a name, like an official name, or is it something she really created?
Mom's secret sauce.
Mom's secret sauce.
Her mom's super talented with eggs, it sounds like. Yeah. That's like her wheelhouse.
I think eggs, you know, it's the fat, you know, it's just it makes everything taste special.
Eggs are very easy to mess up, but very hard to get right.
That's sure. I'm always intimidated. Yeah. And we never grew up with eggs really in our life. Like breakfast was not a thing in our family on the weekdays or the weekends. So we didn't ever master the egg.
I work on it a lot these days. I'll make French omelets and stuff like that fun to try and, you know, get it right. But the hot pot, I was going to ask you, so the broth that goes in the hot pot, is it a chicken broth, a beef broth, a flavor? Is it water?
My mom's is also very special. Like she will basically simmer pork bones, for days, right?
And it's like a bone broth.
Yeah, her bone broth is amazing. Mine's out of a box.
Right.
But it is bone broth. It's chicken bone broth, you know. But like, you know, a lot of ramen places who have great ramen, it's like because the broth is amazing.
Yes.
And so my mom definitely will spend a lot of time making that broth before. So, you know, it's a few days from now, Lunar New Year. So she's probably starting to make that broth. Yeah.
Oh, that's amazing. Mm-hmm. I'm sure your kids love that too.
They do. She does a special thing for them. It's like ground pork that's like stir fry forever. And then it's in soy sauce. Mm. And she'll make udon noodles and then just put that over dried. And it's just like, that's all they ever want to eat.
So good. I'm so hungry.
Yes.
We're going to need to get some of the recipes that are as best we can, maybe a recipe or two to put up on our website. We can try for sure.
But we'll tell my mom and she'll be like, just bring them over. I'll just feed them.
Yes. Well, we were going to plan that. We had a date to do that. Yes. And I think we all got sick or it was the holiday time.
Yeah, let's do it.
But we're going to definitely do that again. What is this gift that you brought us today? This is exciting.
So, like I said, food is our love language, right? Gifts are our love language. So I wanted to bring you our favorite Taiwanese pineapple cakes. Mm. And they go great with a cup of coffee or tea.
Thank you.
And it's just got this crumbly crust. And, you know, it's good luck to eat pineapples. And with New Year coming up, I wanted to make sure you always eat something sweet on the day of New Year's.
Okay.
Spend New Year's Day the way you want to spend your whole year. Okay. Right? Be with loved ones. Eat something sweet. Eat good food. You know, wear an outfit that's new, right?
Okay.
So that you always have like beautiful new clothes and spend it the way you want to spend the rest of your year. That's what I always tell people. And I love that.
So many of my Asian friends always tell me they're very superstitious, that's part of the culture. Is Mama Sherry a superstitious woman?
Yes.
More than anybody I've ever known.
Like, it's really, really awful.
Okay.
No, because I grew up with it and I really try to not give it to my kids. Like, they're just absurd, right?
Right.
Like what? Do not cut your nails after sunset. Because then you won't see your parents pass away. Like they won't be there when they're passing away. I mean, there's so much rooted in like the parent thing, you know, like that's like a big one for me. And you know what? I do not cut my kids' nails after sunset. And it's like, I can't So what I do is I don't tell my kids my superstitions. Yeah. I will follow them, but I won't tell them what they are because they're just like, you don't need that kind of like noise in your head.
That's what I have not heard before.
I have not heard that.
It's so absurd. It's absurd.
Yeah.
What are some that she impresses on you?
For me, it was, I couldn't have houseplants. So when I moved out.
No houseplants.
Oh, I remember this.
My house was filled with like indoor plants because I have a green thumb from my dad. So there was this one houseplant that would
It was a vine.
That was vine.
You know, like the ivy.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was beautiful.
Down the front, around our room. Like literally like probably 30, 40 feet of vines. And I just wrapped around them. My mom's like, no, you got to take that down. It's bad feng shui. That means you're going to get wrapped up in too many bad stuff and it's going to keep you there.
Which, by the way, is probably not untrue.
Okay.
Now that we're looking back at what happened.
Okay. Yes. I believe in that stuff. I'm a little woo-woo like that. Okay. So your mom sounds like a really strong woman to go from a childhood that was less than ideal to having to live with a family that wasn't her own to meeting your father, raising you three wonderful kids and continuing to show so much love through her food and all that she does really. So
we'll have to show you a picture because my mom is like 5 foot nothing and my dad is like 6'2".
Oh, wow.
So it's like, I mean, he's like, he's shrunk, but you know, it's just like, there's this huge gap between them. But my mom has always been like the force, the rock, you know, and my dad just like kind of just lets her do her thing, like just doesn't really like say anything.
Yeah.
And she ran the show.
We like to end the show with some rapid fire questions for you both. So, Tyler, give me one word to describe Mama Sherry.
Like a powerhouse, I think, is a good word for her.
Yeah. Jeff?
Love.
Love.
Recognizing that there's no person that's going to love you more than your mom. So
that is true.
Yeah.
Yes.
Jeff, what's one trait that you got from Mama Sherry?
Good or bad?
Either. I would say good, but if you, maybe bad too.
Good. All right. So good is definitely the giving nature. Mm-hmm. Mom's always a giver. Our whole family's giver. Bad, I think, kind of goes along with a superstition or kind of paranoid sometimes. So
I did not know that. Okay. About you. Okay.
We're learning stuff from everyone.
Tyler, what's one trait you get from Mama Sherry?
I think we'll do both, right? Good is just kind of a deep love of my kids and just providing that home. And I cook dinner every night for my kids. So I think I get that from even though Terrence is an amazing cook. Bad is like just, I'm a worrywart. You know, my mom worries a lot. She's very like anxious. And so that's something I've had to reprogram my brain to not be anymore. I think I'm much less now, but younger, I was just, I would worry about everything.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Jeff, what's your favorite vegetable on the farm?
My favorite vegetable
or fruit
on the farm? It would probably be bamboo, to be honest. I think just because it's not a normal veggie you would have.
Do you eat it?
Yeah.
How do you prepare it?
Stir fry, usually, or soups,
salads. Oh, like bamboo shoots.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I love those. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. What am I thinking? Of course. Yeah. I have like so many of them in my pantry. I use them all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it's just definitely unique just because you get it super fresh. In the supermarket,
the
you get usually dried or preserved and stuff like that. So there's a different texture and different taste when you get
it.
Sure.
Yeah. I bet. Mm-hmm. Oh, I can't wait to come to the farm and try that.
Yeah.
What about you, Tyler? What's your favorite fruit or vegetable from the farm?
Probably the bamboo too.
Oh,
only
wow.
because we don't have a lot of it now. I think there's maybe only a couple.
A
small batch. I mean, it used to be 2 acres or less. But yeah, I think the bamboo, there's a great peach that was actually a gift. It was a wedding gift from Terrence's boss. And we couldn't grow in Santa Monica because we didn't have land. So we took it home to my parents and my dad planted it. And that's my dad's magic. He's like, he like brought it back to life because it was kind of like wilting and dying. And we're like, save it. So he put it into the ground and now we're going to have our 15-year anniversary. So it's been 15 years of nectarine.
Oh, that's really beautiful.
Love that.
Yeah. I love that. Yeah. That's so sweet. Tyler, what's the best advice that Mama Sherry has ever given you?
Actually, this is really great. She gave me kind of the 90-10 ratio. She said, because right before Terrence, I was going through a terrible breakup with this man who I was like trying to save, right? Like we're trying to, like as the oldest, we're like motherly. And she said, you know, it shouldn't be this hard. When you're dating someone, it should be 90% good and 10% hard because my ratio was flipped with that man.
Right.
And so then I was like, oh, and so I tell this to my kids, I tell this to Jeff, like I've said it to you several times, like if it's hard now when you're dating, it's going to be really hard when you're married with kids.
Yeah.
So the 90-10 was the best
advice
she gave me.
That's great advice.
That is great.
Mm-hmm. Jeff, any advice that mom has given you that you can think of?
Sometimes I'm usually a hard head, so I don't really listen well to her. But I think definitely for mom, I think it's more I wouldn't say she's vocally giving me advice, but I always observed the way she moves and how she gets, I guess, to your soft spot. I think that, but definitely when I was younger, I think one of my core memories of mom was us driving home from the swap meet. I had fallen asleep on the way home. And when I woke up, I just saw my mom just looking at me. And I think that was one of the, like, the core memories of me feeling safe and loved. Mm. So I guess going back to the question of what kind of advice, best advice that I got from my mom is love doesn't always come from words, but it comes from actions.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Oh. You know, you might have a hard head, but you've got a big soft heart. Wow. Don't you? Yeah. You really do. You're a Zen person too, I can tell.
Get from
both of them. Yeah. I love it.
Tyler, tell us where our listeners can find you.
Thank you. I'm on YouTube and my handle is Tyler Chow, the creator's attorney, because when it used to be just Tyler, the creator's attorney, that was like a whole thing because they're like, wait, are you Tyler, the creator's attorney? I'm like, no. So I had to put my last name in there. You can find me on Instagram or LinkedIn. I'm actually quite active on LinkedIn. And actually, you know, to my followers and subscribers, I will have more consistent videos coming out. And I'm actually working on something really special. I'm creating a community for my audience to be able to actually have live access to me every week. Wow. It's going to be called the Seven Figure Creator. Wow. That's a community.
We better tune in. We need seven figures.
Yeah, we do.
The Seven Figure Creator is going to be on Mighty Networks, which is a platform that a lot of creators use. So I'm really excited to be working with them and bringing that to people because I think creators need different ways to make money, build business.
I love that.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing.
Jeff, where can we find you? Any additional information you'd like to share?
My social is going to be Going with Jeff. Jeff with the G. So you can just find me on there. And I definitely want to thank all you guys. You know, I know how hard it is to create a business and, you know, take the time and kind of takes a piece for your soul to create a better piece for yourself. So thank you guys.
We like to honor mamas here. And you two did an incredible job of paying tribute to Mama Sherry. And if there's anything else you want to share about her or your family before we wrap it up, let us know.
You know, one of the harder things I think for us is, and it ties back to what Jeff was saying about, you know, sometimes the love that we feel is not necessarily with words or verbally, you know, because they don't speak English. We can't really have deep, deep philosophical conversations with them. Sure. I can speak Taiwanese a little more deeply than Jeff, but sometimes a lot of that love is almost just felt. Do you know what I mean? We're there and we just feel it, you know, and so my parents are amazing parents and we're so lucky to have them. And I think we maybe didn't appreciate that until we were older,
or understand it, right?
Mm-hmm. Because we didn't hear those words. We didn't hear, I love you, right? That was something I introduced into our family. Huh. I would say it to my parents and I don't think they ever say it back, but they're like, you know, and it's just like, and so I think this idea that love is like, it's like permeates everything. It doesn't need to be said so much. And I think my parents really taught us that.
That's really beautiful.
Kind of going on to the basis of like one of my core memories. I think one of my core memories was with Tyler. I think, I don't know if I've ever told you this, but I think I was like in first grade and I think you came home from Berkeley. Mm-hmm. I think that I had the flu one day and I think mom and dad were also out doing whatnot. And you guys, I guess you tucked me into bed and you got my favorite toy and you put it right next to me and said, you know, I'm here to protect you. And I think that's one of like my core memories. And I think that also permeates to the understanding of love doesn't really have one box to it where you kind of see,
that's really
I get to see different types of love and I got to see different types of love from everybody in my life.
Sure.
So, you know, this is a thank you to you.
Aww. And in a way, it kind of like what I'm like sort of gathering is that, you know, Tyler really was sort of this conduit between your parents' love and expressing love to you because you were so much younger than her. And with the English barrier, you were able to sort of, I don't know, doesn't it feel like you were like taking that love that you knew existed from your parents and maybe able to verbally articulate it to Jeff, which is really special.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, ladies. I mean, this has been so special.
Thank you so much for sharing. Super interesting. We're going to need some recipes.
Yes.
And we can't wait to come to the farm.
Yes.
For sure.
Well, let's end it like we always do. I love you. I love your show.
I love you. I love your show. We're going to get into these pineapple cakes too.
Yes.
Thank you so much for listening to Hey Sis, Eat This. If you LOL'd, peed your pants a little bit, or even smirked, please hit subscribe and feel free to rate and review, but only if it's positive.
Also, visit our website for recipes and to sign up for our newsletter at heysiseatthis.com. And don't forget to call into the Hey Sis hotline at 866-4-HEY-SIS with funny mama stories or kitchen conundrums of your own.